I would like to present our academic dean, Dr. Walter A. Meyer, to present the next speaker and the special occasion. We're not going to a carnival here, but we're doing something which we hope is to the glory of God. Dr. Meyer will explain and give all the background. Please.
Thank you, Dr. Deegan. Good afternoon. At a recent meeting, the members of the exegetical department faculty determined that Dr. Sjoberg, when he would be introduced, would be paid a word of tribute, especially in view of the fact that he is completing this year 30 years of service as a professor here on our seminary campus, in this campus, of course, in Springfield. At the commencement exercises last May, the seminary honored Dr. Sjoberg with an honorary doctorate. Since the classes of students currently on campus, and also many of you are friends, were not present for the conferral of this degree upon our colleague, the department thought that it would be appropriate at the time of his introduction to you this afternoon to read again the citation with which Dr. Sjoberg was presented to the seminary president for reception of the degree of Doctor of Divinity. Over Dr. Sjoberg's remonstrance, I read this citation. Dr. Sjoberg received his education from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, Columbia University, American Theological Seminary, Wilmington, Delaware, Biblical Seminary of New York City, and Fordham University. He served congregations in New Jersey, Brooklyn, and New York City. Following his service in the parish, he was called to a professorship at Concordia Teachers College in Seward, Nebraska. He came to Concordia Theological Seminary in 1960 when it was located at Springfield, Illinois. A prolific writer, his literary contributions in 1 year equal the output of most of us in a lifetime. Since his retirement in 1982, he has continued teaching at the seminary with a nearly full load in some terms and a full teaching load in other terms. His eye has not dimmed, and his strength has not abated, and neither has his desire to serve our school. In commemoration of his 80th birthday and in gratitude for 35 years of teaching at Missouri Synod Schools, of which 29 years have been at Concordia Theological Seminary, his colleagues wish to set aside this day of graduation in his honor. The faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary, with the concurrence of the Board of Regents, recommends the Reverend Raymond Sjoberg for the degree of Doctor of Divinity, honoris causa. It is my privilege to present to you the Reverend Raymond F. Sjoberg, M.A., Ph.D., M.R.E., Ph.D., D.D., who will speak to us on the topic, the Dead Sea Scrolls and the texts of the Old Testament. Dr. Sjoberg, please.
I wish to thank the committee that recommends people for a doctor's degree, Dr. Scare and Dr. Kadai and Dr. Preuss, for having submitted my name to the faculty. I'm grateful to the faculty that they acted favorably upon their suggestion, and also the Board of Control, which concurred. 8 months ago this happened, and yet here I have the members of my department honoring me on this occasion, for which I am extremely grateful. The topic, as you know, is entitled the Dead Sea Scrolls, and the text of the Old Testament. Since 1947, manuscripts have been found in Palestine which have added considerable new material to the intertestamental period and have also shed light on the first Christian century in Palestine. Phenomenal archaeological discoveries of great importance to Judaism and Christianity have been made in wadis entering the western side of the Dead Sea. A wadi is a little valley in which water runs, which dries up during the dry season. Manuscripts have been found at five different places in the Judean desert. These throw light not only upon the community of Qumran itself, but they also give valuable information about the thinking of the people of those times. The manuscripts shed light on the text of the Old Testament and furnish us with information on the background of the ferment of biblical interpretation in which Jesus preached and in which the Christian church was formed. They furthermore give information on various aspects of the historical happenings of the pre-Christian centuries and also on the first Christian century. The use of the term Dead Sea Scrolls. Finds have been made at five different places in caves near the Dead Sea, namely at Kirbet Merd, Murabaat, at a cave 8 miles north of Jericho, at Nahal Hever, and at Nahal Sa'alim, and especially in a number of caves at Ayin Feksha or Qumran. In this presentation, the discussion will be limited to the caves at Qumran. Thus, we will employ the term Dead Sea Scrolls in a narrower sense rather than in a broader sense. Sources for the famous Qumran finds. Most of the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in 11 different caves in wadis near the Dead Sea. Manuscripts found at Qumran are usually known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. They have no time relationship to the four places already referred to. Over 50,000 fragments have been found in 11 caves, 250 of which were examined by Arab Bedouins and European archaeologists. The Qumran finds are dated somewhere between 250 before Christ and AD 70. The Dead Sea Scrolls are written on leather, papyrus, and in one instance on copper, the famous copper scroll found in 1952 in Cave 3. Next topic, the importance of the Dead Sea Scrolls for the Old Testament text. Before 1948, Old Testament scholars were skeptical about ever finding manuscripts of books of the Old Testament. Sir Frederick Kenyon, in his excellent book, The Bible and the Ancient Manuscripts, made this assertion, quote, "There is indeed no probability that we shall ever find manuscripts of the Hebrew text going back to the period before the formation of the text which we now know as Masoretic. We can only arrive at an idea of it by a study of the earliest translations from it." End of the quotation. It is interesting to note that at the very time that the printing presses were turning out copies of this book, evidence was being found which would make it impossible for any intelligent biblical student to repeat Kenyon's judgment. The year 1947 witnessed the revelation of information that at least two ancient manuscripts of the book of Isaiah had been found in Cave 1. In addition, among the earliest finds from Qumran, a commentary of the book of Habakkuk also had been discovered, containing the text of the first two chapters of the three-chapter prophetic writing. The materials for Old Testament textual criticism before 1947. The original books of the Old Testament are known as the autographs, and they are no longer in existence. Therefore, our present printed text of the Hebrew Old Testament rests upon hand-copied manuscripts, which are based on copies, presumably going back to the original writings. The Hebrew manuscripts are the foremost source for Old Testament textual criticism. In addition to the Hebrew manuscripts, there are the major primary translations which were made of the Hebrew text into Greek, Syriac, and Latin. These primary translations are the Septuagint, made between 250 before Christ and 120 BC, the Syriac Peshitta, translated between AD 150 and 200, and the Vulgate, made by Jerome between 390 and 410. These three translations give scholars an idea of the nature of the Old Testament Hebrew text that was circulating in Christian circles in the early century in various parts of the Eastern and Western churches. The oldest complete text of the Hebrew Old Testament comes to us from the year 1008 AD, with a Torah manuscript coming from the 9th century and a manuscript of the former and latter prophets from the 10th century. Past differences between present and Old and New Testament textual criticism. Before 1947, New Testament textual criticism had early codices at its disposal. It had the Chester Beatty Papyri going back to 250 to 200 BC. In addition, the New Testament textual critics had a number of uncials at their disposal, such as the Codex Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, Alexandrinus, Codex Ephraemi, Codex Bethsi, Claremontanum, and the Washington Codex. Besides these, scholars had many minuscules, also lectionaries, and New Testament text quotations from the Church Fathers. However, the 15th century to the present time, materials available to New Testament scholars has greatly increased. Between Erasmus's first Greek New Testament in 1516, in which the Dutch scholar had to supply certain verses from the Latin text, there is a considerable difference between Erasmus's first printed Greek New Testament and the editions of Westcott and Hort, Souter, Merx, Nestle, and Allen, as well as the edition of the United Bible Societies. Manuscript discoveries in the last 200 years have made it possible to construct a New Testament text closer to the autographs than the text used by the King James translators by Luther and the translators of the British Revised Version of 1881-85, the New American Standard of 1901, and the New American Standard of some years ago. Parallel developments in the textual criticism of the New and Old Testament. The New Testament had its Textus Receptus, and the Old Testament had its Masoretic text. In both cases, it is an undeniable fact that they are centuries removed in point of time from the autographs. In the case of the Old Testament, the oldest complete manuscript was at least 1,500 years removed from the time the canon was closed in the days of Ezra and the Great Synagogue. The most complete manuscript of the Old Testament is manuscript Leningrad V19a, dated as 1010 AD. It has been claimed by Old Testament textual critics that the Old Testament textual studies were hampered by the fact that the manuscripts of the Old Testament were late, all reflecting a single textual tradition, that is, the so-called Masoretic. Tradition indicates that after the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, Rabbi Akiba and the associates who convened at Jamnia a city near the Mediterranean to the east of Jerusalem, establish an official text. The theory had been put forward that all manuscripts were compared by the Jamnia scholars, and in the case where two agreed, that part became the accepted text. There are two statements to that effect in the Talmud. All manuscripts disagreeing with the newly accepted text were destroyed, so that from that time forward, the Old Testament text was handed down through the Talmudical period, which is 135 to 500 AD, and the period of the Masoretes, 500 to 900 AD. And the text was worked at academies in Babylonia, of which there were a number, and at two academies in Galilee. This text, which the Masoretes supplied with vowels and other helps for reading and chanting, became the standard text called the Masoretic. Concerning this, Charles Pfeiffer wrote, quote, "In any case, the second Jewish revolt, AD 132, which ended in a complete victory for the Romans, so reduced the number of Old Testament manuscripts that the official one readily gained ascendancy," end of the quote. Professor Frank Cross of Harvard called attention to the fact that the Murabba'at texts, which are 2nd century AD, agree in a marked way with the Masoretic text. He supposed that the process of fixing the Masoretic text as authoritative was completed in Palestine in the days of the second Jewish revolt, that's 132-135, and that the movement of biblical interpretation championed by Akiva and Aquila stands at the end of the process of establishing an official text. As a result of the of Qumranic studies, it is now generally held that the position which we just outlined is not correct, and that the process of fixing the Old Testament text was completed in the period between the writing of Qumran text, which would be the latest 70 AD, and the Synod of Jamnia, whose dates are given either as 96 or 116 AD. The general background of the biblical Qumran manuscripts. 11 different caves yielded fragments of all biblical books of the 24-book Hebrew Old Testament canon, with the exception of Esther. The latter's absence may just be accidental, although there are those who believe that the Qumran sect did not recognize the book because the principal people in it had not returned to the Holy Land. Caves 1 and 4 furnished Old Testament students with a majority of biblical manuscripts. When Cave 4 surrendered nearly 300 scrolls in fragmentary condition, and as this cave surrendered 300 scrolls in fragmentary condition, and as a result, there are supposed to be found samples of a number of different textual types for virtually every book of the Old Testament. On the whole, three different textual types are recognized in the Dead Sea Scrolls, namely the Septuagint, the Samaritan Pentateuch, and the Proto-Masoretic. By Proto-Masoretic, we mean the text which was only had consonants, did not have any vowels, and the text which later on ultimately became the what we call the Masoretic text, which was supplied with vowels and with punctuation marks and with signs for cantillation. The following biblical books which contain more than one form are the following. Jeremiah, one text found corresponds to the Greek Septuagint text, and one agrees with the Hebrew text. A comparison of the printed text of Jeremiah in the Hebrew Bible and in the current Septuagint shows that in 2,700 instances, the Septuagint is shorter than the Hebrew from which it formerly was believed to have been translated. The prophecies about the sins and nature of the foreign nations around Judah, found in Hebrew as chapters 46 to 51, are located in the Septuagint as inserted in chapter 25 after verse 13. This means also that there is a different order of the chapters in the Septuagint after chapter 25 as compared with the Hebrew. A second book having somewhat different readings and text is the book of Isaiah, which was found in Cave 1 in two forms. One, a complete copy of the 66 chapters, and another having about 50% of the 66 chapters. The complete one we will call the St. Mark Isaiah scroll because it was owned by the St. Mark's Monastery at first, and the other, the Jerusalem University manuscript, because it was the University of Jerusalem which purchased it. The St. Mark's Isaiah shows certain deviations from the manuscript text, while the University of Jerusalem scroll is basically in agreement with the Masoretic text. A third book showing a different textual tradition is Samuel. At Qumran, certain manuscripts have been found which agree with the Septuagint over against the Hebrew text. A number of the manuscripts in Samuel were discovered that showed a somewhat different text than that now represented by the Masoretic Hebrew Bible. The fourth and fifth books that had different types are Joshua and Kings, which show Septuagintal readings differing from the Masoretic Hebrew text. That they differ has led certain scholars to the conclusion that the divergences between the Septuagint and the Masoretic text were not due to mistranslation on the part of the Septuagintal translators, but due to the fact that the Septuagint used a somewhat different Hebrew text from which to translate. There are scholars who now believe that the text of the Septuagint was made by Jews in Alexandria and represents the Hebrew text used by the Egyptian Jews. If this is true, it is claimed, then the historical books of the Septuagint can be employed to determine the pre-Christian texts of these books. Next paragraph, three divergent textual traditions of the Pentateuch, the five books of Moses, the Torah. In 30 Pentateuchal manuscripts from Cave 4, there are to be found represented three textual traditions, namely the Masoretic, the Septuagintal, and the Samaritan Pentateuchal. The majority of manuscripts, however, reflect the Proto-Masoretic textual tradition. Scholars were surprised that when reading certain manuscripts of Deuteronomy and Exodus, that they discovered that Exodus disagreed with the Proto-Masoretic tradition and agreed with the Septuagint. This boosted the stock of the Septuagint as a reliable tradition in the eyes of some scholars who specialize in textual criticism. Both Deuteronomy and Exodus are said to reflect the Septuagintal tradition. Exodus and Numbers in the Samaritan Pentateuch. There were also found at Qumran a number of manuscripts of Exodus and Numbers written in the Paleo script used by Jewish writers before the adoption of the Aramaic square writing and when they began to use the Aramaic as a language in place of Hebrew. These manuscripts probably are to be dated before 250 BC. Thus, they would come from a period earlier than most of the Qumran biblical manuscripts. These Exodus and Numbers manuscripts agree with the Samaritan Pentateuch, a Hebrew text of the Torah, which the Samaritans considered their total Old Testament canon. They are not written in Samaritan, an Aramaic dialect used by the Samaritans, but are a form of the Hebrew text. It is well known to Old Testament textual critics that the Samaritan Pentateuch agrees with the Septuagint in 1900 places over against the present Masoretic text of our Hebrew Bible. Next paragraph, the popularity of certain books at Qumran. It has been observed that certain books are numerically more represented at Qumran than other biblical books. The hunters for manuscripts found 15 different manuscripts of Deuteronomy, 12 of Isaiah, and 10 of Psalms. This fact is interesting since in the New Testament quotations citing the Old Testament, these same books are more frequently cited, more often than any other books of the current Hebrew 24 book canon. The Proto-Masoretic text at Qumran. The two most complete manuscripts of a biblical book are the two Isaiah scrolls, namely the complete text of Isaiah, which we already stated, and the St. Mark's manuscript, which is the St. Mark's manuscript, and the Hebrew University Isaiah, containing considerable less than the St. Mark's scroll. The two Isaiah manuscripts have been subject to intensive study by many Old Testament scholars, especially by those entrusted with their publication. There are differences between the two Isaiah scrolls discovered in 1947. The complete Isaiah manuscript differs in some respects from the text as printed in the latest editions of the Württemberger Bibelgesellschaft's Hebrew Bible. There are reasons for these various differences. Vowels were not indicated in the two Isaiah manuscripts because vowels were only supplied by the Masoretes sometime between 500 and 600 AD. The scribes of the two Isaiah scrolls made copying mistakes, which are characteristic of all copied manuscripts. There are copying mistakes in the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll as well as in our printed text of the Hebrew Bible. That's why you have 1,300 Kethev and Kari readings. Mistakes in biblical manuscripts can be explained and accounted for by the methods of reproduction, namely by dictation, copying manuscripts, and also resorting to memory of passages as one is translating. These are all well known, all of which are evident in biblical manuscripts. There are differences between the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll and the text of the Biblia Hebraica that can be explained and accounted for by the methods of transmission just described. Such differences as exist in the various manuscripts do not necessarily reflect upon the autographs, which always must be the standard by which the transmitted text of manuscripts copied by fallible human beings are judged. That ultimately is the purpose of the science of textual criticism, to remove copying errors. It is the ultimate objective of textual criticism to restore the autographic text. The significance of the two Isaiah scrolls for the Hebrew Old Testament text. The Isaiah St. Mark scroll is on the whole similar to the traditional text found in our Hebrew Bibles, but differs with it at some points. The Hebrew University Isaiah scroll agrees closely with our present Masoretic manuscripts. Mansour, a scholar who has worked with the Dead Sea Scrolls for years and published books and articles dealing with the Dead Sea Scrolls, claimed, quote, that similarities and agreements of some texts with the standardized Bibles attest to the existence of the Masoretic tradition before the final stabilization of this text in the 8th and 9th centuries, end of the quote. The Hebrew University Isaiah shows that a virtual standardization had been come about more or less spontaneously two or three centuries before the Masoretes made it official. Scholars claim that the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll indicates that major changes that occurred in the transmission of the text had already been completed by the time of Jesus, not only in the books of the law, but also in the books of the prophets. A comparison of St. Mark's Isaiah manuscript with the Isaiah text of the Biblia Hebraica will reveal that there exist conspicuous differences in spelling and grammatical forms. Nevertheless, scholars are impressed by the substantial agreement in the words of the text. What makes this remarkable is the fact that when one considers by comparison how widely the earliest manuscripts of the New Testament vary and how radically the ancient Greek versions differ from the traditional Hebrew texts, the little differences between the two Isaiah scrolls from Qumran are impressive. Further, when one considers the time difference between the Dead Sea Scrolls and the medieval Hebrew manuscripts on which our printed text rests, again scholars are amazed how faithfully the text of the Old Testament has been transmitted. According to Harris, the two Isaiah scrolls are of interest for Old Testament textual studies because they show that the Hebrew Bible looked like what it looked like before all manuscripts were made to conform to one standard text. The Revised Standard Version and its use of Isaiah in the, of the St. Mark's scroll. Professor Burroughs, director of the American Schools of Oriental Research in Jerusalem, when the first scrolls were found, was given the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll to take to America for possible sale. On his way to America, and being a member of the Old Testament section of the Old Testament Revision Committee, he carefully collated this manuscript and suggested to the committee the adoption of 13 readings from the St. Mark scroll, which now appear at the bottom of your Bible as one ancient manuscript. That's this one. I have the passages here, but I won't read them. There are 13 passages. In 8 of the 13 cases, either the Septuagint or the Vulgate supported these readings. By a comparison of a number of translations which appeared since 1952 when they were adopted and put in the RSV, it will be seen that no new translations accepted all of these 13 readings. Next, an American translation, the New International Version adopted a few but rejected most of the newly adopted readings of the RSV. In his book, The Dead Sea Scrolls, Dr. Burroughs wrote in 1956 with great candor, this is a quotation from that book, "A brief review will show that even in those 13 places, the superiority of the manuscript reading is not always certain. For myself, I must confess that in some places where I voted for the emendation, I am convinced that our decision was a mistake and the Masoretic readings should have been retained." End of the quote. Fragments of other manuscripts of Isaiah have been found in the caves. They closely agree with the Masoretic text, and nowhere do they agree with the Septuagint when they differ from the Masoretic text. Biblical commentaries at Qumran. Commentaries called Pesharim have been found on Psalm 17, Isaiah, Hosea, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah. These are all, of course, fragments. The commentary on the prophet Habakkuk contains two of the three chapters of the biblical book, as already stated. Scholars here have a text of two chapters of Habakkuk, which is 1,000 years older than that found in the printed Hebrew Bible. Sukhanik dates the commentary as having been written shortly or copied shortly before the destruction of Jerusalem, AD 60 to 70. Albright, on the other hand, placed its date of origin near the beginning of the Christian era. The Habakkuk commentary was only uses only two of three chapters because chapter three is a psalm. It is a theophany. Since Habakkuk was used by the Qumranites to depict their own history, in which they substituted themselves for the Judeans, and made the enemy, either the Greeks or Romans, they could not use the third chapter, and thus this chapter was left out. And that means, therefore, that chapter 3 would not be available for evaluation and textual study. The text of the Habakkuk commentary preserved a more clearly written and better preserved copy than the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll. In fact, the scribe of the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll was a miserable scribe. He made many mistakes, and later on he corrected many of his errors. This commentary exhibits many features of the St. Mark's Isaiah, peculiarities of spelling, grammar for which parallels have been found in Aramaic, in the Samaritan dialect, and in early medieval Hebrew poems. A book called Testimonia, which was found in K4, contains a collection of passages relating to the Messiah, and they are Deuteronomy 18:18, chapter 5, 8, Numbers 19:15 to 17, and Deuteronomy 33:5 to 9. The Psalm scroll of Cave 11. In Cave 11, there was found a scroll published by Sanders in 1965, which contained 17 canonical psalms, and mixed among them were also 9 poems, parts of which had been previously known and others not. Like the Jerusalem Incomplete Isaiah scroll, it is believed to come from the first half of the Christian era. Professor Skehan of the Catholic University, now deceased, does not believe that it is a canonical Psalter. The order of the Psalms does not follow the order of the Biblia Hebraica. Harris has asserted about this collection of Psalms, it may be said that the text is close to the Masoretic tradition. In its standard parts of the manuscript, Sanders noted that at the bottom almost every column, aside from orthographical considerations, the Masoretic text is indicated for the lacunae. The Psalm texts are not strictly Masoretic, yet they are representative of that text. The Psalm text lies between the St. Mark's Isaiah and the Jerusalem Isaiah. Daniel and Ecclesiastes. The early dates of biblical manuscripts from Qumran militate against extreme views of Ecclesiastes and Daniel as originating in the Maccabean era, 2nd century before Christ. K4 has a manuscript of Ecclesiastes dated about 175 BC. There are a number of Daniel manuscripts from K1 which are dated by paleographers as coming from the 2nd century. One Daniel manuscript has chapter 2:4, where the Aramaic begins, where the Hebrew ends and the Aramaic begins, so therefore confirming this change, which has been challenged by critical scholars. Conclusion, general conclusions about the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Old Testament text. The Qumran Hebrew scrolls, placed in various caves before AD 70, bring us closer to the original text of the Old Testament. As the author of the article on the Dead Sea Scrolls says in the Dictionary of Theology by Elwell, we now have Hebrew manuscripts which are just 300 years removed from the completion of the canon. The Isaiah scroll takes students to a text at least 1,000 years earlier than the complete Old Testament manuscripts on which our translations rest. It appears that up to AD 70, a number of divergent textual traditions were current. The Septuagint was made from a Hebrew text in use in the 1st century BC. In the 1st century BC, the Masoretic text existed in much the same form as its later standardized Masoretic text. The Qumran manuscripts also established the pre-Christian state of the Old Testament. They show that in the main, in its substance, the Hebrew text was remarkably preserved with substantially little change. The Dead Sea Scrolls also show that a tradition of biblical study outside of the rabbinical schools existed. The Dead Sea Scrolls also have enlarged our knowledge of Hebrew and Aramaic languages and have applications for the text and interpretation of the Old Testament, a subject which might constitute a future paper. Thank you.
Now we have time for a few questions here. So, Dr. Serbik, would you be kind enough to stay here? Maybe you can recognize the brethren when they come to the microphones. I don't myself see anyone at either one at this time. All right. Yes, please.
Yeah, Doctor, are all the scrolls, have they all been looked at and interpreted, or are they still in the process of doing that?
Well, there's the big controversy, as you may know. The Biblical Archaeology Review, in two articles which appeared toward the second half of last year, complained that the original group of scholars who were assigned to publish the fragments and organize them and translate them have been holding on to this material and that they have not been publishing yet. So roughly about 25 years have now elapsed since any significant material has come from Jerusalem or from the scholars who are supposedly to be in charge of it. So that's the charge which is made by Shanks in the Biblical Archaeologist Review. In the present edition of the Biblical Archaeologist, January 1990, there's a letter by Dr. Cross, who was the very first scholar appointed to be in charge of the publication of manuscripts. It's an international team, and they have now set up a schedule whereby they claim that possibly in about 10 years, the material they have will be made available. But there's a lot of material still which has not been published. Now, how much it pertains to the biblical text, I don't know. So you're really dependent upon the people who have the manuscripts, although the official publication for the Dead Sea Scrolls has been assigned to the Oxford University Press, and you have a 7-volume so far called Discoveries in the Dead Dead Sea. So they have been publishing. One volume contains nothing about 40,000 fragments, which out of which people can't make very little because they're so broken up.
Dr. Veltz, please.
Thank you very much, Dr. Serbik. It was good to hear you again. I was interested in your comments about the discovery in the fourth cave of the testimony, and you mentioned several passages from Deuteronomy. Now, the idea of testimonia and so on as a possible document underlying some things that we have in the New Testament, it's been around for a while now, I'd say,
right,
30 years or more. Is there any historical relationship between the theory of testimonia regarding the New Testament and these testimonies that were discovered at Qumran regarding the Old Testament?
I would say that the main value of that document is to show that in the pre-Christian centuries there was a very strong belief in the coming of the Messiah, and the people at Qumran who have been mostly identified with the Essenes are supposed to have looked for the coming of two different Messiahs, a priestly Messiah from the house of Aaron and a kingly Messiah from the house of David. So that's simply a theory, because a few of those texts are also used in the New Testament. Now, whether there was any influence or whether they used it, that's certainly open to speculation.
It never occurred to me before,